Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast. Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts, Amelia
and Beth.
Hey, Beth, you seem like you're in a good mood tonight.
Whoa, Amelia, we just gave something away.
Yeah, we just did our drawing for the duo demonology tickets to the Hinsdale House on March 19th.
I totally won. I'm the winner. I totally won. It was an inside job the whole time.
So that is very exciting. Congratulations to My Bloody Galentine for winning that. And thank you to her for participating. That was really cool. And everyone else who participated too. A lot of our listeners participated. So thanks, everyone. We'll be giving away more stuff throughout the season. So stay tuned.
And if you did see the video on Instagram of us giving it away, I just want you to know that I forgot that we were doing that for video, which is why I described everything Amelia was doing. But hey, give me credit. I did a good job.
Oh boy.
Because usually I do have to describe what Amelia is doing for folks, because Amelia is very non-verbally expressive.
Okay, so Beth, what are we talking about this week?
This week, we are talking about mansions.
Ooh.
Haunted mansions. Mansions that may be haunted. Mansions that are definitely haunted. Mansions that probably should be haunted.
So, Beth, I'm interested to know, when you were looking this up, did it make you really, really, really want to live in a big, huge, giant, beautiful mansion?
No, not even a little.
Oh, it made me want to so bad. I don't know about the mansions you're doing tonight. The mansions I'm doing are, they're like the type of mansions you don't really even think exist. Does that make sense? Like, this isn't like a big house. It's not a McMansion. These are like 28-bedroom sprawling estate homes.
Nice.
And they're so beautiful.
See, I don't think that I would want to live in a place that big because, quite frankly, I am lazy and it feels like it would be too much energy to get from one end of the house to the other.
You'd get all your steps in, but you'd never have to leave. Everything would be right there.
And with 28 bedrooms, that means that I could possibly have 27 friends.
There you go.
Right.
So, Beth, would you like to start us off?
I would not. I would not even a little.
Sure, then I'll start us off. My first mansion tonight is Sea View Terrace, aka the Carey Mansion. So one of the most haunted houses for sale right now is Sea View Terrace, located at 197 Ruggles Avenue in beautiful, sunny Newport, Rhode Island. With over 40
whole episode on Newport.
We did not. We did an episode on Rhode Island and you chose different places from Newport.
Ah, okay.
Because I went and I looked it up to make sure I didn't double anything.
That was good thinking.
With over 43,000 square feet sitting on 7.6 acres and listed at a whopping $29,900,000, one can probably guess there's a lot more going on inside this incredible mansion's walls than just a few ghosts. That would include 29 bedrooms, 18.5 bathrooms, oceanfront views, a ballroom, and a tennis court. I would highly suggest our listeners go look at the listing online because this mansion is straight out of a fairy tale. Built in 1907 for Edison Bradley, president of Kentucky Whiskey Distillers, W.A. Gaines & Company of Frankfort, Kentucky, he owned the exclusive rights to the Old Crow whiskey label. The mansion was originally located in DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C., covering more than half a city block, and included a chapel with seating for 150 people, a large ballroom, an art gallery, a 500-seat theater.
Hold on. Are we talking about a house that gets moved?
We sure are.
Oh, man, there's going to be so many good ghosts in this house.
Because in 1923... Bradley began disassembling his Washington, D.C. mansion and relocating it to Newport. Sea View, the Elizabethan Revival mansion already on site, was incorporated into the design and lent its name to the new chateau. Rooms that had been imported intact from France and installed in D.C. 20 years prior were moved once again and reassembled now in Newport, and the new building was constructed around them. The ALA, which I think was like Architects League of America, awarded Bradley's architect, Howard Greenlee, the 1928 President's Medal for the home. Seaview boasts many articles of virtue, including Flagitalian, an early Renaissance stained glass window designed for the Milan Cathedral. A great hall features a whispering gallery, which is an elliptical room, in which a person standing at one end can whisper and the person at the other end of the room can hear what they said.
Ooh.
Very cool.
Very cool.
So very sadly, shortly after they moved everything around from DC to Boston.
Do you have a lot of details on how they did that?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Bradley's wife died, which is really sad.
Oh, that is sad.
Yeah. And he spent five more summers there. And then he died in 1935. The house went to the couple's daughter, but by 1941, she left because of back taxes, and it sold in 1949 for only $8,000, which is crazy.
$8,000, but how much in today's money would that be?
Still not a lot, because my grandparents bought their house like 10 years later for like $16,000. And that was like a very normal middle-class home in Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Right. Well, but 1941, unless it was in December, like we weren't even involved in World War II yet. I just don't know that we can make a comparison between 41 and 51.
It would be the equivalent to $153,000 today.
What?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's nothing.
It's crazy.
Nothing.
For 43,000 square feet, a chapel, tennis courts, a gallery, cathedrals, like the whole thing. So for many years, the school housed students for different boarding schools in the area, and it was also used in a daytime soap opera, which I guess was a pretty big deal back in the day because it mentions this everywhere, called Dark Shadows, and it was a fictional Collinwood mansion, and then it hit the market again in 1974. This time is when it sold to the Careys, a New York couple who loved architecture and wanted to renovate. Their daughter, who herself was an architect, still lives on the property but doesn't live in the main house. And they're the people who are selling it now. And that's why it's AKA the Carey Mansion, because they renamed it after themselves.
In all fairness, if I had my own mansion estate, I might not name it after myself, but I would definitely rename it.
Yeah.
Like, it would be like Kittenland.
So celebrity ghost hunter Amy Bruni of Kindred Spirits, who actually herself lives in Newport, Rhode Island, is quoted as having said, "I've encountered activity in the basement where something tugged at my hair. I've also heard voices and footsteps when no one else was present. I also played organ music in the chapel portion, which caused a lot of our equipment to react." Bruni claims the tales of it being haunted began to spread when Salve Regina University leased the property to use it as dormitories. She also claimed that the cause of the hauntings may be all the antiques that adorn the home, saying that there are, quote, numerous antiques on site. The fact that an actual old Italian chapel was brought from Italy and rebuilt into the mansion itself and had a few documented deaths associated with it. The mansion has been featured on many shows, including but not limited to Kindred Spirits, Ghost Nations, and Ripley's Believe It or Not. Many, many people describe the feeling of being watched in the house, feeling of cold spots, the hearing of footsteps and disembodied voices. There was a rumor that there was a woman who had hanged herself in the home, but no records show any suicide ever took place on the property. The most prominent spirit in the house is the wife of the original owner, Mrs. Brady. She didn't want to leave her beloved house. In fact, her funeral was held in the chapel that's attached to the home. Almost immediately after, she was seen playing her favorite Etsy organ and can still be seen playing her organ there today.
Ooh, I like musical ghosts.
That's the story of Seabrook. No, Seaview. That's the story of Seaview Terrace.
That's a great story.
Thanks.
So is it actually along the harbor there? Like along where the cliff walk is?
It is on the cliff walk.
So you heard that a part of the cliff walk collapsed last week, right?
No.
So a part of the cliff walk in Newport collapsed. It's like that 3.5 mile walk. And it was actually right outside the, I thought it was Salve Regina, but is it Salve Regina?
I think so.
Okay. So it was right outside of where Salve Regina's campus is. And at like the 42 steps place. So they're going to be doing a lot of work on the cliff walk apparently this spring, try to get it back up and running for people to come and do the walk in the summer. But yeah,
anyway, I've never done it. Have you?
I have a couple of times. It's fun. You know, it's, you go out and you can walk along and you can see all the houses and you see the water and there's lots of places to stop and sit and take a picture. And
nice.
Yeah. It's a nice little walk. Anyway, I thought with this next one, we'd play a game. I'm going to talk about the Sprague Mansion in Cranston, Rhode Island. And so, Amelia, what I would like to do is instead of the usual thing where we tell the story and then all the ghosts, I think instead I would like to play which ghost is doing the haunting. So I'm going to tell you about a bunch of people who have died in the building. And then we'll talk about the haunted activity and you get to guess who you think is doing all the haunting. What do you think?
Okay.
Okay. Sound like a plan? All right. So the first ghost we have at the Sprague Mansion is Charlie the butler. Now, Charlie the butler was found by a group of college students who were there and they just did a little seance in the building. And so he came through and he said through the, sorry, it was not a seance, my mistake. It was through a Ouija board. And Charlie tells them through the Ouija board that he wants his daughter, that he wants to tell his story, that his daughter was supposed to marry the owner of the property, right? And Charlie was the butler to the owner, but it never happened. And so Charlie the butler laments, my land, like he didn't get the land because his daughter never got married. So that's Charlie the butler. Then we have Amasa Sprague. Amasa Sprague was the man who lived there. He was murdered in 1843, right on the front steps as he was leaving the house. He was actually bludgeoned to death and his body was found the next morning, all beaten up. He had been shot in the wrist. And I feel like this was just to add insult to injury. He was bit by a dog. I just, every time I read that, I'm like, I feel like somebody threw this in as an afterthought. He was bit by a dog. Supposedly, he was murdered by John Gordon, who was one of his employees. Gordon was arrested, convicted, and hanged on Valentine's Day, 1845, at what is now the Providence Place Mall. So, you know, if you're driving down 95, you go through Providence and the huge mall is there on the left. That used to be where they executed people.
Cool.
Anyway, so not too long after his execution, and when I say not too long, I mean like later that day, they get all this evidence that he was actually innocent. The whole time it was not him. He did not murder Amasa Sprague. So as a side note, he was the last person put to death in Rhode Island because they found out he was innocent. And so nobody was ever, they outlawed the death penalty in Rhode Island after that. The next candidate, Viola Lynch. Now, Bob and Viola Lynch were actually part of purchasing the mansion from the Sprague family when they sold out of it in the 1970s. And Bob and Viola Lynch were running the Cranston Historical Society. So this was in 1967, they bought the property. So Victoria, in October of 2002, she also came through a Ouija board, supposedly, telling the girls who was there, who were there. It was just a group of women on like a mommy's wine night out. They thought they would go and do a fun little haunted tour thing. And so they grabbed the Ouija board, which folks, you know that Amelia and I definitely do not recommend doing if you don't know how to use a Ouija board. So they went into one of the rooms and found out that this woman or this spirit with the initials VL wanted to put through a message to say, tell Bob I need him. So that was supposedly Victoria. Then we also have William Sprague II. Now, he was a stern man and he had a family. And he kept them all, you know, pretty much in line. He was, everybody goes to work, everybody does their thing. You know, children are to be seen and not heard, that whole thing. Well, he came down to breakfast one morning and promptly choked to death on a chicken bone. Now, I don't know who eats chicken for breakfast. I almost feel like if you're eating a chicken bone for breakfast, maybe stop doing that. Then we also have Kate. This is a woman. Kate Chase Sprague, who married into the family. And she was actually a big reason for their downfall as a wealthy family because she was in charge of the money She was William Sprigg II's daughter-in-law or something. It was all sort of weird. Anyway, she managed to fritter away the entire family fortune before dying like destitute.
Like, how did the Sprague family get wealthy?
I'm not sure how the Sprague family got wealthy or where the property came from. But so those are our candidates for who's haunting the mansion. Okay. So, as I said, in 1967, the mansion passed out of the Sprague family. It was originally actually the Cranston Print Works. So it used to be a print shop. That's how the Sprague family made their money.
Nice.
Okay. I knew I'd get to it eventually. All right. So they just had this big mansion that they lived in. And there was, you know, the print works was there in the mansion for a long time because, you know, back in time, people would have their businesses in their homes. Anyway, so they have a whole bunch of different rooms that they have throughout the mansion. One of them is called the doll room. And it's full of, believe it or not, dolls. So people have reported in there that there's this ghosty film that just kind of shows up. It's a white film that just floats right there in the doll room. Other people have gone in. They did a video recording where the doll's eyes in the room actually moved. And you can see the doll's eyes move in the video. And what's really impressive about that is the doll's eyes are painted on.
Sweet.
They're not like articulating eyeballs in the heads. So there's also down in the cellar, there's a big wine cellar, you know, it's a big mansion. So of course there's a wine cellar. There are a tremendous amount of people who have awful, awful experiences in the cellar with orbs, just the cold spots, the feeling someone is watching them, just that dreadful, you know, I am not in a good place kind of feeling. Ethel Duckworth, and I only wrote down her name because whenever you get to say Duckworth, you definitely say Duckworth. She was an original owner of the house back actually before it was even the Sprague's house. And she reported when she was in the cellar that she had been touched on the arm by some sort of spirit that was there with her. The white film touched another guest in the basement in the wine cellar one evening. So that white film from the doll room isn't just seen in the doll room. It moves all over the house. And so the last thing that people kind of feel a lot is there's definitely an icy presence down there in the wine cellar. Employees will often, while they're alone in the mansion, they have all sorts of weird things happen. So a couple of quick stories. There were a couple of employees, they had closed up the print works for the night, and they're sitting at one of the tables, you know, just getting everything all set up, you know, to go home for the night. And all of a sudden they hear two floors above them crash. This enormous crash must have been some huge piece of furniture falls over. Well, they run upstairs to check because naturally that's what you do. Nothing has moved. There was nothing there that could have made that sound. They said the chandelier in the ceiling above them as they were sitting at the table actually shook from the force of this impact. So they could not figure out what had made this crashing. There was another story. These are actually from the Cranston Historical Society. They were coming in one morning or afternoon or, you know, whenever you show up for work at a historical society. And as they unlocked the front door and disarmed the alarm, right? So, you know, there's nobody in the place. It was two people distinctly heard footsteps go running up the big grand staircase. Right. So, that's another place that people see a lot of spirits is there is a big, you know, like, not like, you know, like fancy hotel from The Shining sort of staircase, but there's a very like elegant staircase that comes down. And lots of people have seen apparitions show up on the stairs, floating orbs. But what I think is kind of neat is there's nobody here who seems to have a bad experience with any of these spirits. They're all just sort of like hanging around. They show up. They, you know, if you're not expecting them, maybe they give you a little startle. But yeah. So any thoughts on who might be? There's a lot of different things that get seen. There's a lot of possibilities about who could be doing it, but
so we know It's in part haunted by Charlie Butler and Victoria Lynch because they came through on a Ouija board. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, maybe everyone. I mean, none of that is really
conclusive.
Yeah.
Right. No, I just thought it was great because there were so many possible spirits that were hanging out in this house. There have also been EVPs that have been recorded there. And some of the best ones have come through reporting that someone lives in Scarborough, someone, you know, who lives there is a woman. And then one of the best ones that was reported was an EVP of a child running through just going, "Mommy, mommy, 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 mommy." And apparently it was very clear. So yeah.
Spooky.
Sprague Mansion, home of the Cranston Historical Society in Cranston, Rhode Island.
Cool.
I believe if you call and make an appointment that you can just come and learn about Cranston and maybe Sweet. Hear some spooky stories.
Yeah, very cool.
I like fun haunted mansions. And somehow did we settle on haunted mansions of Rhode Island or?
Well, isn't one of yours out of California?
It will be.
All right. It
starts in Connecticut, though.
Cool. So my next story is Belcourt Castle of Newport. So this one is also in Rhode Island. Because I feel like all of the really big mansions in New England are in Rhode Island.
They could be.
Or at least like the old ones. Like there are a lot of mansions in Massachusetts, but I feel like they're kind of newer. So Belcourt is a 60-room, 44,000 square foot Louis VIII style estate on Bellevue Avenue, and it has a long reputation of being haunted. Construction began in 1891 and was completed in 1894. It was intended to be used only for 6 to 8 weeks out of the year. Belcourt was designed in a multitude of European styles and periods. It features a heavy emphasis on French Renaissance and Gothic decor, with further borrowings of German, English, and Italian design. In the Gilded Age, the castle was noted for its extensive stables and carriage areas, which were incorporated into the main structure. Belcourt was designed by Richard Morris Hunt for 33-year-old Oliver Belmont, who was divorced from Sarah Swan Whiting and the father of the daughter, Natica, whom he denied paternity to during the construction of his enormous 60-room summer villa. Based on the Louis VIII hunting lodge in Versailles, Belcourt incorporated Oliver's love of pageantry, history, and horses in the magnificent interior halls, saloons, and ballrooms. Belmont wanted Belcourt designed precisely to his specifications. Hunt was hesitant, but he concentrated on his guiding principle that it was his client's money he was spending. So the construction cost $13.2 million in 1894, which would be worth over $80 million today.
$80 million home?
Mm-hmm.
Impressive.
And that's just to build it. That's not resale value. So Belmont employed some 30 servants with wages of approximately $100 per week. And that was in 1894. So they're living pretty well at that time. Oliver's father, August Belmont Sr., in case anyone's wondering how this young gentleman afforded to build his giant mansion, his father was a German-American financier, diplomat, politician, party chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and horse breeder and racehorse owner. He was founder and namesake of Belmont Stakes, third leg of the Triple Crown series of American thoroughbred horse racing. So that's why this place had so many nice like horse carriages and places for horses. And it's also how he afforded the whole thing. So Oliver died in 1908, and the house switched hands a couple of times after that until it was purchased by the Tinney family in 1956. They used the estate to showcase their extensive art and antiques collection. So on July 28, 1957, Belcourt opened its doors to the public for guided tours of their museum. One night, Harold Tinley awoke to find a man standing in the bed next to him wearing a long brown robe and a hat covering his face. Moments later, the figure walked through the wall and disappeared. Years later, when the family was remodeling that same room, they discovered there used to be a doorway where the ghost went through. Harl recounts another haunted encounter in the book, Haunted Newport. Quote, "No one was home, so I thought it was strange that the lights were on in the ballroom. Being naturally conservative and not wanting to burn electricity unnecessarily, I went through the ballroom to turn off the lights. After I turned off the switch, there was very little light left. As I passed the front of the armor, something screamed at me. It was horrible and loud, roaring sound. The lights went back on, and I turned them off again, and the armor screamed. When it screamed a third time, I ran as fast as I could from the room. The scream was terrifying, like someone being killed. Two Gothic chairs occupy the grand ballroom and are believed to have menacing spirits attached to them. It's reported that a woman on a castle tour tried to sit in one of the chairs and was thrown into the center of the room. Yeah. These chairs are now
roped off.
That's
why they don't let you sit on any of the things when you go on these tours?
Well, at least at this house. So, and as you'll remember, he said before about that suit of armor. Well, it's still there. And people claim it still moans and screams. The arm supposedly moves just before the scream is heard. A monk has been seen around Belcourt after the Tinneys bought a German wood structure of a monk. He first appeared in the Tinney's bedroom. At times, he appears in the chapel as if preparing for a mass along the grand staircase. Several other ghostly apparitions have been witnessed around Belcourt, along with the moving objects and the sounds of disembodied voices. The home is now owned by Carolyn Rafalian, who's the owner of Alex and Ani, and she's been working on restoring it. You can still get guided tours today for $8 a person every Saturday and Sunday.
Cool.
I know, right?
Would you like to talk about Sarah Lockwood Pardee?
Sure.
Sarah Lockwood Pardee was born in New Haven, Connecticut in 1839. And she was born to Leonard and Sarah Pardee. Her parents were very society types. Her father worked in a carriage building capacity. I think he might have been in charge of building all the carriages, but her mother was a society lady. She did the teas and she did, you know, whatever the 1800s society ladies did. The two of them raised a very well-rounded child. She spoke four languages. She was a music composer and she had particular strengths in math and science. She grew up to be known as the Belle of New Haven, and she was a whopping 4'10" tall and 95 pounds when in 1862, she marries William Winchester. Now, William Winchester is the heir to the Winchester Shirt Factory. His father had built the Winchester Shirt Factory and had been working there for quite a while. And so William was being groomed to take over the shirt factory. So here we have Sarah. She's in this wonderful little marriage, you know, with a really nice guy. He appreciates her. You know, they have a really solid business and, you know, she's going to be fine, you know, for the whole rest of her life. Except in 1866, William Sr., the dad, decides he doesn't love shirts so much, and he actually really likes firearms. So he ends up selling the shirt factory, and he opens this little operation called the Winchester Repeating Arms Company. And he brings his son, William Winchester, along with him. So now William Jr. is going to be taking over the firearms company. So I just want to point this out because I want to be clear that Sarah did not marry a family that made firearms. Sarah married a shirt manufacturing family, right? And that's going to come into it in a little while. So 1866, they've been married for 4 years. We start the firearms company. And that June, Sarah gives birth to her daughter, Annie. So now Annie was born with this terrible disease called marasmus. Have you heard of this?
No.
Essentially, it means that the child cannot absorb protein or calories. And so after the child is born, they starve to death over the course of about 5 weeks. Just absolutely. Yeah, absolutely horrible. So June 15th, Annie was born, and July 25th, Annie passed away. Sarah never really recovered from Annie's death. She always felt that Annie's death was a direct relation to the establishment of the firearms company, that it was just a bad omen and it was always going to be a terrible thing.
Like it was like karmic?
Sort of. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because yeah, her whole life, she is going to feel guilty about the fortune that she's about to inherit from all these guns. So her daughter dies in 1866. And it was so funny because I kept reading about, and then in a short time, she also lost her father-in-law and her husband. Well, if by a short time, you mean 14 years later. So in 1890, sorry, I can't math. In 1880, Sarah's father-in-law falls very ill and he dies and he leaves the company to his son, William, who was very sick with tuberculosis. And he, William Jr., died himself about 4 months later, leaving Sarah $20 million and a 50% stake in the Winchester Repeating Arms Company, which meant she had about $1,000 a day in income from it. And turning that into 2022 money, that was a $500 million cash payout and $26,000 a day income from the ownership stake.
Wow.
So she had some money. So now her daughter died. She never got pregnant again. She never had any other children. So her daughter died. Her husband died. Her father-in-law died. She's all alone. So she leaves New Haven. She's going on a little trip and she makes her way up to Boston, where she seeks guidance from a medium here in Boston. And the medium tells her that, yes, she's right. It's the spirits of all the people who have been killed by the Winchester 1873, the gun that won the West, it's commonly referred to as. And all of those victims are actually haunting her. And what she needs to do is to move west, build a house, and let the spirits live there. So in 1886, she picks up and moves from New Haven, Connecticut, sells all her stuff. She gives away a bunch of money, sets up some foundations in New York, and she moves to San Jose, California, where she buys this little 8-room farmhouse. And she began construction on that didn't stop until her death in 1922. Now, is it just me or does everyone want to sing in an 8-room farmhouse?
I'm unfamiliar with that song.
Write in and tell Amelia where that comes from. So Sarah Winchester, as is her married name, gets it in her mind that she needs to begin construction and she needs to begin construction now. And so she hires this team of carpenters and tells them, start building. And so in a little over 10 years, from 1890 to 1900, it went from being an 8-room farmhouse, baby, to a 160-room mansion.
Whoa.
Right? Like huge, absolutely enormous. And so the construction just continued and continued every day, all day, 24 hours a day. Now, I have to tell you, when I was a kid, this story scared the heck out of me. There was something about this house that's just being built constantly because there are spirits coming around and the woman who is building the house is trying to confuse them with all the building. So it's true. There are 160 rooms. It's, you know, 7 stories. But here's the thing. All the rooms don't make sense. All the doorways don't open to real rooms. The staircases don't go anywhere. You might start walking down a hallway and find that it didn't take you anywhere except right back where you started. So it was almost like her goal in building this house was to give the spirits a space to stay, as well as confuse them so they wouldn't come and bother her, which seems to have worked.
Cool.
She kept inviting spirits, psychics, She kept inviting psychics, mediums, anyone who could really try to connect with the spirits that Sarah felt so guilty about. She would invite them out to the house in California. And so there was really a constant stream of spiritual advisors who were coming in and out of the house. She had a specific seance room that she would bring them to, and she would, you know, commune with the dead spirits to get better ideas of what she should build next. Right. And I have to admit, in my imagination, as I heard about this, you remember what my house looked like growing up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Always. We didn't even have like sheetrock on our walls, folks. Like we just had like the insulation was there and you could see studs. And like, that was just the house that we lived in. So I, of course, imagined this house in California that was constantly being built looking like our house, like really crappy. Right. But no. Absolutely gorgeous and luxurious. They installed stuff like crystal chandeliers. There were parquet floors all over the place. And she had all these stained glass windows installed, but she just didn't have any stained glass windows installed. She called Mr. Tiffany himself from Tiffany and Company, and he hand designed and made her stained glass windows. So it's just an absolutely stunning property, right? That I had in my imagination always thought was this rundown little gross thing. Anyway, in 1906, there was an earthquake. And when the earthquake happened, the house was damaged pretty badly. They ended up having to close off and I believe take out the entire fourth floor. In the next few years, just to keep the stability of the property together.
And what did the other floor sit on?
I don't know. Maybe it was just the fourth floor got like a little smushed or something and they had to lower the fifth floor down onto it. Maybe I misread it and it meant everything above the fourth floor had to come off. And so now maybe it's only a three-story building.
Don't know.
I don't know either. It's a good question. Anyway, so when Sarah died in 1922, she left the property and all of her stuff to one of her nieces who had everything that she needed. And so she really just took, a couple of like personal items of Sarah's, and she sold everything else at auction. Well, so the house sold very quickly to the people who lived next door. Right. And they had this idea that they were going to make this a real like amusement park sort of thing and have it be like a real event and a place to come to. And I say amusement park, but that amusement parks weren't a thing yet in the 1920s. But they had heard about this new very fancy thing where you build this wooden track and you hook a bunch of cars together and you make them go up and down steep hills on the track. It was a fancy new thing that was all the rage in the 1920s, and they were going to have one at the Winchester House. But what they found out was that people were not at all interested in coming to an amusement park there. What they were interested in was just coming in and touring the house of the crazy eccentric lady who had been building her house nonstop for like 40 something years. Right. They wanted to see what the inside of this place looked like. So the owners opened it up the next summer to the public and had people coming through. There were gardens built, or so Sarah Winchester had gardens, and they brought in places where like you could sit and, you know, make it a little bit more agreeable to more people in the public, as opposed to just this one lady who would just bring her own little chair out there. Anyway, so I was really excited to see that you can go there and there's lots of stuff to do there. You can get day tickets between $20 and $40. You can do flashlight tours at night for $30 to $50. There's an escape room package that you can do. It's $20 for an hour. There's axe throwing for $25. You can take a tour of the gardens for $10 to $20, and they even have an ADA compatible tour, and that's $20. Well, That's only like a 45 minute video, and then you get to tour the gardens, which I thought was kind of cheesy, but I can understand why it would be very difficult in this property to be able to bring people with physical impairments all over the place. So I definitely understood that. And then the other thing is, if you want to do something really fancy, like get married there, they have wedding packages. They have a mystery and magic group package birthday. For 3 hours, you can go in. It's $50 a person, but they'll only do it if you're between 12 and 17 years old for a birthday party. Well, I would think they would get a lot more people if they let adults come in and like do adult birthday parties, but whatever. Anyway, and if you can believe it, if you want to do a function there, there are so many rooms you can choose from. I couldn't even start to list them there. I was just scrolling and they're like in this room and this room and this room. Anyway, so the Winchester House in California has long been a favorite of mine, and I wanted to sneak it in on the mansions because they originally came from Connecticut. Ta-da!
Any other fun news or events? Anything going on?
No, I never have anything going on.
So we may or may not, when this episode comes out, have another Instagram giveaway. We're still waiting to figure that out. And congratulations again to My Bloody Galentine, aka Becky Ann Galentine, for winning last week's giveaway. Very exciting. To the Hinsdale House with Duo Demonology. And we hope you all have a really great week. I'm like losing my voice tonight.
And send us some mail.
Yeah, send us some mail.
Send us some mail and leave a review.
Yeah. Tell a friend.
Tell two friends.
You already left us a review. Tell your friend to make list. Blah, blah, blah. Tell your friend to leave us a review.
Put a post on our Instagram page.
What?
No, reply to a post on our Instagram page. Pay attention to Amelia. She needs more attention.
I need more attention. All right. And as always, you guys can find us online at Ghost Hunting in New England.
No. See, you can't start out "and as always" and then do our contact because it throws me off. Then I think I'm going to be saying happy hunting, but then you're like Facebook.
You guys can find us online at ghosthuntingnewengland@gmail.com. At ghosthuntinginnewengland.com, on Facebook, Ghost Hunting in New England, on Instagram, at Ghost Hunting in New England, on Twitter, at Ghost Hunting NE, and that's all the places you can find us. And as always,
happy hunting.